Hey, Mart here.
Oh my God, hi.
Listeners want to know what's going on with your love life.
Oh my God, don't get me started. These apps have me going crazy. I'm on there for hours, but I can't seem to find a date.
Have you heard of Motto? Motto is the new no-nonsense hookup app for gay and queer people.
Hookup apps have become a staple in queer culture, but they also come with the bullshit. Headless torsos, blank profiles, catfish after catfish, and I feel like I'm always scrolling the grid.
Well, on Motto, every profile is verified by a real human, and every photo has a face.
Ooh.
Motto sends you daily matches of people who match your interests and kinks. There are no fees, no ads, and no nonsense.
I love that. Sounds like my kind of app.
Get Motto today by going to the link in this episode's description or use invite code ZVOGS when signing up. That's ZVOGS when signing up.
Ooh, I think I will. Motto: gay and queer hookups without the nonsense.
Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. I know, wig, I feel that already. Wig, okay. Wig, did you just say wig? Wig, okay. I am ready for my wig to go flying.
Ooh, hi, kids.
Hi.
I'm
Hi.
Martir. I'm
I'm
Martir.
C. Tepper.
And this is Wig It Out.
I feel like we should be singing it in like a musical
That was my best in
theater,
my
but
musical
we
theater
neither of us can
impression.
sing. This is why we go to drag shows to
I
watch
went to
other
school
people
for
sing.
singing, you
Oh, you did you
bitch.
really? You can sing? I learned something new every fucking episode. What?
Wow. Okay. Anyways. Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
How you
welcome
were.
to
But anyway,
the
I'm not interested anymore.
podcast.
Yes. Welcome to the
Martyr
podcast.
has left the chat.
Yes. I quit Zoom.
Don't
I'm
do
screaming.
this to me. I'm so sick.
I'm screaming. Okay. Well, from our brief little intro, you can kind of tell that we're doing a musical theater theme. Caitlin, what are we doing today? Who are we talking to? Who do we have?
From the Great White Way to our Zoom call, we have Cacophony Daniels.
Hi. Woo! Hello.
Listen,
Just
the applause is deafening. Just like what your name means. I learned up what ca looked up what cacophony meant.
That's
Like
good.
I had an idea, but it
Yes.
was wrong. I thought it was just like noise, but it's not.
Well, it kind of is. I mean, so I always tell people I go with there was an episode. Remember Julie Andrews had that children's show on Netflix? Did you know this? She had like a
No.
Sesame Street like show on Netflix with puppets, and it was all about like
How
teaching
did I
kids
miss
about
this?
theater. You've got to watch it. It's
Oh my
fabulous.
God.
It's Julie Andrews and puppets. What's more, and musical theater. What's more to want? And
Oh.
there was an episode where she said, "Oh, it's a cacophony in here," and one of the puppets is like, "What does cacophony mean?" And she says, "Cacophony is a loud mishmash of many sounds," and that's what I always say is that's me, a loud mishmash of many sounds, cause I'm singing live. Because when I started doing drag, live singing was a really rare thing for drag queens to do. It's funny how it comes in waves, right? But yeah,
I
so
still think it's rare.
it is. Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially anywhere but New York, it's
Yeah,
completely
true.
rare.
True.
But when I was even the queens who can sing and who have really good voices were not singing when I first started doing drag because there was so much influence from RuPaul, and none of the RuPaul girls like were saying that they were singers at that point. So like everyone was just lip sync, lip sync, lip sync all the time. Now you see more people like Bootsy LaFerris has been doing it for like forever, but who knew she
Yeah.
could sing until like a year ago? And it's like, oh no, she's a
True.
fantastic singer, right? She's a fantastic singer. She just didn't market that as one of her skills because the clubs weren't equipped for it, or it wasn't part of the culture, or whatever. So it was a rare thing. So I was like, okay, well, I have to have a name that says that, like, the noise is coming from me. The call is coming from inside the house.
Oh my God, I love that. That's so smart, though. So we're gonna dial it a little back. You were born in San Francisco and you grew up in the Bay Area. What was that
Yes.
like?
Fabulous, actually. I mean, I'm hashtag old, so
Was trying to figure out how old you were, but I'm like, like before the interview, but I'm like, I'm not gonna ask.
No, that's okay. You can ask. I say it all the time. I'm 45.
Oh, you're
Oh no,
not
especially in drag years. That's
that old.
old.
Well, drag years, I guess.
When
Yeah.
was the last time there was a queen over 40 on RuPaul's Drag Race?
Tempest du jour.
Yeah, exactly. And she
That
left
was it.
in
Kasha
like
Davis.
5 seconds. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, well, on the main season of the American version. Like, if you watch other
Yeah,
versions,
no.
like Australia, they've
Yeah.
got old queens on there all the time. I'm like,
Even
bitch, I'll watch
Spain
you.
too. Spain too.
Yeah. I'm
Yeah.
like, where's the old queens in America? We're still here.
I know.
So growing up when I did, in the Bay Area, it was the middle of the AIDS crisis is what was happening, when I was growing up. So, I mean, not that that was like a huge part of my life, except that as a young gay person questioning my sexuality and all those kinds of things, the only images I saw of queer people were people living with HIV and AIDS. That was literally it. I go back and now and I watch like movies, like queer movies that came out when I was like a teenager, and I was like, oh, there's like this gay movie, and I watch it now, I'm like, no, this is an AIDS movie. But at the time, the two were synonymous. There was really no difference between like cultural entertainment about gay people and cultural entertainment about people living with HIV and AIDS. It was like that was it, especially when it came to male presenting people, right? There were, sometimes there was a story about, a brave woman serving in the military and her partner on the side kind of thing. But like, that was kind of it. So, and the Bay Area being, San Francisco and all of that was kind of one of the epicenters of the crisis. So that was kind of always on the periphery. So that I mentioned that just because as a young queer person, like growing up and discovering who you are in the world, that was like a big influence in kind of who I was. And I started doing theater when I was really young. There was a children's theater in my community, which was great, called Rainbow Theater. Rainbow Theater, come on.
In the Bay Area, what could that be?
Exactly. They weren't, and they weren't actually going for that, but it was, I mean, like, all the kids super gay, or Mormon, oddly, but like, or both.
Probably
Both. I
both,
was gonna
to be
say that usually goes hand in
honest.
hand too.
Yeah, it's usually the same.
Well, except for all the poor Mormon girls who were, thinking they were gonna meet their
All
future
of them.
husbands there. I
I
know, poor
know.
things. So I did children's theater, and then I started doing professional theater when I was 12. I did my first Equity show when I was 12 years old.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
Damn.
I was one of the child singers in Evita. I know, right? Please, Mother Ava. So that and that was my first exposure, my first conscious exposure to like gay men, like because there were dancers in the show, and like gay men kikiing in the dressing room and the whole thing. Like that was my first exposure to all of that. So that was like this awakening into this whole new world of like queer adults, even though again, I didn't know exactly what it was, but I had an idea.
Did anyone else around you know?
I mean, my mom says now, like, oh yeah, we always knew, but I don't know if she actually did. I mean, all of my friends were girls, and I did theater, and I sang, and I took tap class. And when I was 5 years old, I got my only pet from my whole childhood, who was a fish, and I named him Tad, after a character on All My Children that I used to watch with my grandmother. So, I mean, super gay, right? Although Tad is an amazing name for a fish, just period. But so yeah. I guess to sum up, growing up in the Bay Area was fabulous. And I mean, I had a great childhood. And when I did eventually come out at late in high school, in the late 90s, I didn't come out at school, but I came out to school friends and eventually to my parents and things like that. I'm very lucky that my family was all accepting and wonderful, that my friends, most of them turned out to be queer anyway, because we always find each other no matter what, right? So I was really blessed. I had a fantastic youth.
And you went to musical theater like high school and college.
Well, high school, we actually didn't have musical theater.
Oh, you didn't?
No, not at all. I went to the only public school in my town, only high school in my town. And we had a drama teacher and a band teacher, and they hated each other because they had to share the only like performance space building, basically. They literally hated each other, so we never did musicals. We didn't even have, I think my freshman year there was like a choir, but after that there wasn't even any kind of singing at my school at all. It was just band, and our band was like really good. My sister was in the color guard. The band was like really good. They won all kinds of awards and competitions and things like that. They were great. And the drama department, because like my teacher hated musicals, we did all like Shakespeare stuff and classics. We did the Rivals and She Stoops to Conquer, and then, you know, As You Like It and Romeo and Juliet. And so like the raciest thing, the most modern thing we did my senior year, we did Noises Off, which is a fabulous play, but a straight play, you know. So I mean, straight, yeah, but straight, everyone in it is straight. So, you know, yeah, exactly. So to do musicals, I had to participate outside, but I was, like I said, I was already kind of working professionally outside of school anyway by that point. So I didn't need that to pursue what I really wanted to do. And then I went to a college. I stayed in the Bay Area for college because this was before the internet. I had no idea that like CCM or Michigan or any of these colleges where everyone goes now that kind of feed into Broadway and stuff.
Yeah.
I had no idea that those existed, and neither did anyone else. You know, the guidance counselors at school, they all knew what I wanted to do, but none of them had any idea that those things were out there because they were all the way on the East Coast, and here I am in California. And if you wanted to study, you know, drama in California, everyone thought, oh, well, you'll go to LA and you'll do movies and TV and film and stuff like that. But I knew that that was not what I wanted to do. So looking for like musical theater, there wasn't really much. So I went to a Jesuit school called Santa Clara University that had a theater and dance program. And my freshman year, they started a minor in musical theater. So I majored in acting and minored in musical theater is basically what I did. And they were, it was lovely, and I'm really glad I got the education, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone who actually wanted to work in the business because they didn't, we didn't help have you. A showcase. They didn't teach, they helped me. Listen, they helped me with like me, which was great. Yeah. But they didn't help with like the business of what show business is or anything like that. So that was kind of a letdown. When I got to the city, fresh-eyed, you know, out of college, and all these people had had showcases and connections with casting directors and all of these things, and I had none of that. Even though I had this resume with all this professional work on it, because I'd been working since I was 12, I didn't have any connections. So I really had to start from scratch.
Oof. What made you decide to move to New York? And you moved in 2001. That seems like kind of a crazy year to move here.
It was indeed. I mean, I always knew that New York was where I would end up because it was the center of musical theater. So when I did that first professional show when I was 12, it was Evita, and our Evita was this woman named Darren Alte. And if you look her up, she was one of the replacements for Patti LuPone in Evita on Broadway.
Oh, shit.
She was fabulous. And she, I mean, so talented. And, you know, could come in and work at a regional theater where they had 2.5 weeks of rehearsal, right? And like, because the show was part of her body, she knew it. And thank God she had done the show, because 2 days before we opened, our Perón got deported back to Argentina because he was actually Argentinian.
Oh, shit.
And they were like, what are we going to do? She's like, I'll call somebody. And so she called someone who she'd done the show with on Broadway, and he came in and did it and was great. But so I got this idea that I was like, oh, first of all, it was like, oh, I could do this for a living. Like, this is what I can be when I grow up. Because everyone's always asking you when you're a kid, what are you going to be? And I had no idea until I did this and was like, oh, this is something I love to do and I could do it for a living. And then I was like, well, how does she do it? Oh, she went and she did it on Broadway. And then now she gets to do it everywhere. So I was like, great. So that's what I have to do. I have to go to New York and then be in a show on Broadway, and then I'll get to do the show everywhere. Mm-hmm. Which it's turning out, knock on wood, to be kind of what's happening.
So, ooh,
there you go.
We'll ask more about that later. So how did you get involved with drag? Moving a little bit away from musical theater.
Yeah, no,
Though it's still
absolutely.
part of it.
Of course. I mean, it absolutely is. You know, I'm weaponizing my MFA, even though I
Yeah,
don't have
literally
one.
though.
But I don't have an MFA. I just have a BA.
BFA.
It's not a terminal degree. I'm so lame.
That's fine.
How did I get into drag? So I think a lot of queer kids are doing drag from, you know, the womb, basically, right?
Yeah.
I
Now,
mean,
yes.
I
Not
was dressed.
before.
Yeah, exactly, right? I was
Yeah.
dressing up and I was, you know, doing all of that. And when I was 16, back at the children's theater that I did both the children's theater and the professional thing. At the children's theater, there was this play called Frankenstein Slept Here. It was a Halloween play, and it was a horrible play. Where like all like these two unsuspecting like people, it's very much Rocky Horror, but PG Rocky Horror. These two, like an unsuspecting couple shows up at a castle because their car broke down, and all of the typical Hollywood monsters are there. There's a mummy, and there's a Frankenstein, and there's a blah blah blah. And there was a female vampire character, like Elvira kind of person, who was there. And I had been cast as the guy who shows up whose car breaks down. And there were always two casts so they could have as many kids, you know, performing as possible. And the girl playing Elvira dropped out, Vampira, dropped out of the other cast. And the director came to me and said, "I have a funny idea. What if you played Vampira?" And I was like, "Okay, sure." So that was my first like drag on stage where I had heels and fishnets and did a face and you know, but this is before, again, before the internet. We did not have YouTube. I had no idea how to do any of the things I was doing. I do have a I have a picture of what I looked like. It's horrid, but it's out there. So that was my like first like drag on stage. But again, I'd been playing characters and whatever, and that was like a character that I played. It wasn't like I'm a drag queen now kind of thing. The same in college. I didn't like I went in drag to a couple of Halloweens and tricked some straight boys, and that was hilarious. I mean, like showing up at a frat party in drag and having boys hitting on you, and you're like, really? Because I'm a mess, but hey, great. But and then my senior year, we would always do this show. The theater department would always do this show to try to like at the beginning of the year to interest, other kids to come and see the shows or participate in the program or whatever. It was called SCU Presents, and there would be dance and scenes and skits and songs and whatever. And so I did this skit with another kid. This was the year that Titanic had come out. And so I did this skit with another kid where I was Celine Dion and I lip synced to My Heart Will Go On, and we did this whole thing, and it was silly and stupid. And I have pictures of this as well. I borrowed one of my sister's homecoming dresses. It's terrible. I look awful. But one of my professors came up and was like, "I think this is what you're supposed to do." And I was like, "I'm an actor." Like, I was like, this is not what I'm going to do. I'm never going to do this. Drag is not real art, you know, all this kind of stuff. Of course, but I was already like obsessed with RuPaul because Tu Wong Fu had come out and she was on MTV all the time. Like I was watching her when those things were originally happening, right? So I was obsessed with RuPaul, and I thought like I thought all that was amazing, but I didn't think that I was going to be a part of it because I was going to be this serious. I'd done all the Shakespeare in high school. My college didn't, you know, we had the musical theater program, but it wasn't huge. So I'd done all this like acting. So I was like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm not going to do this drag thing. So I kind of laughed it off and whatever. But it always kind of poked its way in, you know, again, Halloweens and things like that as I got older. We're going to talk about it later, but I did the Jersey Boys tour, and I was on that tour for 5 years. And when you're on tour for that long, you get bored. And you have lots of time in these cities where you're doing the same show every night over and over again, and you know the show. You're not rehearsing except, you know, a new person comes in or whatever. And so you get bored. And so the cast would throw these theme parties because we had nothing else to do. And we threw like an 80s prom and we had like, you know, poker nights and like all these kind of things, right? And so all the gays in the show by this point were watching Drag Race, and this was season 3 of Drag Race. And so we decided we're going to throw a Drag Race finale party. We were in Minneapolis, and there's this fabulous gay bar there called the Gay 90s. It's like 5 stories, like 8 different bars. It's amazing. If you're ever there, go. And so we rented out a full floor of this bar, and we're like, okay, everyone, we're having this party. Everyone has to come and drag. And it was amazing. There were 51 people touring with us, the band, the crew, you know, everyone, all the actors, obviously. Everyone came in drag. Most of it was horrible, but so fun. And the gays in the show were like, well, we're going to go full out. So we learned how to glue down our brows.
Oh,
and
shit.
We carved hips, and we styled wigs. Like, we went, because again, we had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
We went all out. And so, and that was the night, and then we came up with names, and that was the night that Cacophony was born. And so we did a performance, a lip sync performance. It was silly and stupid, and had a great time. But I was like, okay, this is something that I like, now I have all these skills and I really like to do it. When I left the tour a year later and I got back to the city, I like told my agents, hey, if any drag stuff comes up, like, film, TV, whatever, or drag roles in shows, because there were starting to be some, obviously, Rent and Chicago. Mm. This is before Kinky Boots or Priscilla, but like, I was like, if any drag stuff comes up, let me know. I would love to audition. I have these skills. Here's a picture of me from this party, you know, whatever. And so they did start submitting me for that kind of stuff. And there was a smaller pool back then of people. So I started to get work. I got to play Mary Sunshine in Chicago, which is fabulous.
You have the voice for it too. It's such a hard role. Thank you.
It is a hard role. It's not easy.
I'm going to talk about this a bit more later, but I don't know how they cast for like that role. And I also don't know how they cast for Frankie.
I know.
It's
a really obscure, but listen, there's so many people out of work in this business. You can always find someone who could do it.
Who could do it. Yeah. But it's so like, just to have that skill set is so difficult.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I did that. And then I did, an episode of this TV show called Mysteries of Laura with Deborah Messing on NBC. It was only 2 seasons. Did that. And I was like, oh, this is like a real thing that can get me work. So, I had met Sutton Lee Seymour at a party, because we had both had a relationship with this off-Broadway show called Fabulous the Musical. And, I saw her at a party and I was like, hey, I'm trying to get into this drag thing. Let me know if you have any advice, whatever. And she was like, well, I'm actually hosting this live singing drag contest at Barracuda. Do you want to come and be in it? And I was like, sure. So I made myself an outfit and I styled myself a wig. This time better. I mean, still there's been lots of glow up since then, but like much better than it had been. And I went to the contest and I won. It was like, oh wow, this really is something that I can do. And Sutton says all the time, she's like, I saw you, and I was like, oh, I'm keeping my eye on that bitch. So Sutton started calling me to like, hey, come and be my guest at this night that I'm doing at New World Stages, or come and be my guest at Albatross out in Queens or whatever. So I started doing that with her. And then the end of 2016, I was in Jersey Boys on Broadway, but we had the notice that it was closing. Mm-hmm. And Sutton called me and was like, hey, come guest at Broadway Mondays next week. And I was like, sure, no problem. So I went, I did a Broadway Mondays with her. And the guy who was producing it at that time, Justin Luke, said, hey, Sutton is going to Puerto Vallarta, you know, in January, and is gonna be gone for 3 months. Will you fill in for her for those 3 months? And I was like, sure, like my show is closing. I have literally no other employment. Mm-hmm. Great, at least I'll have a job on Monday nights. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and it was super fun and I had a great time, and such a great time. And I built a following, and you know, Michael Musso showed up and talked about it in the New York Times and blah, blah, blah. And so when, I know, right? It was amazing. So when Sutton came back, the bar was like, hey, would it be okay if we just kept both of you? As long as you both still make the same money? And we were like, I mean, I was like, okay, I have nothing else going on. And Sam was like, sure, less work, same money, sure. So then we started working together, and that's when everything really clicked, because Sutton and I have a fantastic, we have a fantastic relationship off the stage. We're great friends, but we have a really, I don't know what it is, but we have a great rapport on stage. I mean, I could try to say things about what I think it might be, but we have a great rapport on stage. We just click together and work together really well. And it was this wonderful thing that just kind of happened. And from there we started, you know, we did a run of shows at Don't Tell Mama, and then we started touring, and then we started working for Atlanta's events and doing all that kind of stuff. And so now this thing that became that was this like side gig from my acting career has become this thing that kind of has equal footing. And then of course the pandemic happened and there was no acting career. So then drag was literally all I could do, even though it was from my living room here. It was like the only thing that I could do. So it you know, it kind of took over. So now I've got both going on.
I love
Yeah.
that. What have been your big influences for your drag?
I'm obviously Broadway divas and all of those folks are a huge influence. I'm hugely influenced by big, fabulous female personalities, of course. So people, my number one is Bette Midler, absolutely number one. But people like Barbra Streisand, like Patti LuPone, like Liza Minnelli, like Judy Garland. I mean, it's so cliche, but there's a reason it's cliche. It's because they're all so fantastic. But you know, so and then you know, and then people that are less drag cliche, at least nowadays, but people like Ethel Merman and Phyllis Diller is a huge one for me too. I freaking love Phyllis Diller. She was a genius. You know, so folks like that, but the biggest one really is Bette for sure, because she's literally everything I want to be. She is you know, hysterical, so funny. Her voice is amazing. But at the same time, a brilliant actress and ballad singer. I mean, she sings some these heartbreaking folk songs that are like literally just make you want to cry your freaking eyeballs off. And you know, the over the top hilarity and the tongue in cheek. I mean, she's bawdy, but she's not up there, you know, literally telling poop jokes, right? Like it's not that. It's very, it's dirty, but it's not filthy, you know, the fine line between those two things, right? So they're absolutely influences, but you know, and obviously musical theater, but I do take influence from, you know, pop divas too. You know, because I'm a child of the 80s and 90s, I, you know, Madonna and Cyndi Lauper, and then moving on, Lisa Loeb, and you know, but also like TLC and Salt and Peppa and like all of it, like I love all of that. And so the, you know, the only show that I host regularly in the city is a Broadway themed night. But anytime I can sneak in any of those kind of pop references too, I really love to do that. And I'm really inspired by all of that as well.
I'll request it next time.
Awesome.
Before we take our break, what is your favorite musical?
I always say that it's tied between two, and they're both really obscure, and really kind of melodramatic. The first one is Grand Hotel. It's a fabulous musical that has a crazy history. It opened in 1951 and flopped, based on a movie that was based on a book, didn't do well at all. And then in the early 90s, Tommy Tune and Maury Yeston got a hold of it and were like, we can fix this and make it better. And they did this amazing, crazy, like, books will be written about it, just as or already have, I think. Just as the Chorus Line Experience was like this crazy workshop thing. That's what they did with Grand Hotel, where they literally went to a burned out hotel in Midtown. And they stay and they created the show in the lobby of this hotel using the columns and the floor and all of and the furniture that was left over. And they Tommy Tune and Maury Yeston created the show. So Maury Yeston took the best of the songs that were already in it and wrote new songs or reworked the songs or wrote like a second half to each song or whatever. And the cast was absolutely, I mean, Jane Krakowski was in the original cast. Like absolutely, Michael Jeter, oh my God, was won a Tony, just amazing. And it was this just amazing. Like it's absolutely melodrama. Like it absolutely is. But the concept when they took the show and put it on stage, they literally just recreated this hotel lobby from the revolving door to the columns that were in the way to the parquet floor. So much so, I was in the West Coast premiere of the show, and when I was 15, which is why I fell in love with it. And we had the Broadway set and costumes,
Oh,
and you
shit.
literally learned the choreography based on like, okay, and so count up 9 squares and in 15 squares, and that's when you start. Like we didn't have numbers on the stage. You literally counted squares in the parquet floor to know where you went. But it was like
Oh.
it was brilliant and amazing. And you never left the stage because there was no way to leave the lobby of the hotel. So you sat on the corners and watched the action going on. Very conceptual. It's fabulous. I think it won the Tony for Best Musical, I think in 1992 or 3 or something like that. I believe. I could be
Wow.
totally wrong about that, but watch their Tony performance. It's amazing and wonderful. So that's number one. And then number two is Violet, which is an older Jeanine Tesori show that was on Broadway for a short period of time with Sutton Foster starring
Oh.
in it. And Sutton Foster and Joshua Henry and Colin Donnell were the three leads. So that was when it was on Broadway. It was started though off Broadway in the 96-97 season, and was so good that it for every award that it was available for, it beat Lion King because that
Oh,
was the
shit.
same year Lion came out. But obviously it was an off Broadway show, so it wasn't eligible for any Tonys. But it's early Jeanine Tesori. It's fantastic. The music is like this Tennessee country mixed with musical theater. It's touching and wonderful, beautiful soaring songs, and it's fabulous. So those are my two favorites.
I love it. I like learning about, like, because there's so many obscure shows that I just don't know about, and I like hearing about them.
Yeah, same. I have no knowledge about musical theater, so I'm over here like,
Wait, didn't you study singing? Hold
Yeah,
on.
I thought you studied
I
singing.
was studying for voice to be a voice teacher.
Oh,
So
fabulous.
yeah. Anyways,
That really worked out.
yeah, that worked. The shade.
The
Here
Here we
we
are
are. And
today.
here we are today. And with that, we're taking a break. So I have a bitch to beat up. We'll be right back,
Bye.
kids. Bye.
Bye.
Screaming, fuck you.
Sorry. You always ask me not to be mean, but sometimes I can't help it.
Wig, did you just say wig?
Wig, okay.
I know, wig. I feel that already.
Wig, okay.
Wig, did you just say wig?
Wig, okay.
I am ready for my wig to go flying.
Ooh, and we're back.
We're back.
What a lovely break.
This was a quick one for us.
It was.
It was.
Unlike the several times we've had 2 week breaks.
Yeah, we've had 2 week breaks in between our first and second part.
Yep.
S stuff happens,
Yeah, life happens.
life happens. People's internet dies.
We've also done episodes where we've recorded an episode while doing an episode, like episode inception.
That has happened.
But enough about us.
Yeah, enough about us. Get back into the cacophony.
Great. Love it.
So the question on everyone's minds
Yes.
is Jersey Boys, like
Okay.
starring in it, touring in it, traveling around the world with it, except around the US with it.
Yeah,
What
absolutely.
was it like playing Frankie Valli?
It was amazing. I have a cra my experience with Jersey Boys was wonderful, and still is wonderful. I was temping in the city, and I'd only been dating my now husband for a year or so, and he called me one day while I was temping and was like, "Hey, my friend Nick is dating this guy Bill, and Bill is working on this show, and they need short guys who sing high." And I was like, "Okay, cool, that's me." And he was like, "Yeah, so like you should audition for this show. It's about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons." And I was like, "Okay, sure. Thanks. but so that was like, it was on my radar. And when they announced the production, I don't think I had any, this was like after they'd done it at La Jolla, and the guy who had played Frankie at La Jolla was not going to go on with it because he couldn't sing it more than, like, he couldn't even make it through the run at La Jolla.
Oh, never mind
doing it on Broadway. And that's actually, so at La Jolla is where, when the guy who was doing it and couldn't get through, that's where they came up with the concept for the show, which I'm gonna give away some Broadway tea here, which is that the show is vocally doubled by other people who are in the show. So there's no pre-recording going on. Everything is happening live, but to get the sound that Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons had, and they do touch on this in the show. Mm-hmm. Their producer, Bob Cruz, says, we're gonna double Frankie's voice. So they're, you know, so to get the same sound. So when you listen to a recording, and now every recording artist does this. If you listen to pop music nowadays, everyone is double. They're doubling themselves usually, mm-hmm. although sometimes there's a ghost doubler who's not them, who sings better. But
yeah,
you know,
J-Lo.
But yeah, right. Oh. But call her out. But for those original recordings, it was 8 tracks and there were 4 guys, so they would double all of them, and so they would record Frankie and then he would record himself over himself, right? Mm-hmm. So to get that sound in the show, rather than just taking his vocal track and trying to like split it and double it for the audience, which wouldn't sound, there was always someone with Frankie singing backstage, and that was always the Joey track. So in the original Broadway cast and on the original Broadway cast recording, that's Michael Longoria who's singing with John Lloyd Young to get that sound. And it's not just him, it's the same for all 4 guys. They all have someone doubling them off stage. So La Jolla is where they came up with that, though, because no one else knew the lines to play Frankie, but the guy lost his voice. And Steve Gavea, who was playing Joe Pesci at the time, he could sing it, but he didn't know the lines or the choreography. And they were like, well, just stand off stage and sing it for him and he'll lip sync to you. So that's what happened for the end of the run at La Jolla. And they were like, oh, actually, that's a great way to get this sound that we're looking for. So they needed more guys. They were like, okay, well, we need Frankie and then we need the guy who's doubling him. And then we need, you know, an understudy and another understudy for the guy who's understudying the understudy, you know, kind of thing. So like, wow, we need a lot of guys who can do this. And this is really hard to find. So that's why I got this phone call. So when they were auditioning for the Broadway run, I went to a chorus call and went into the room. It wasn't Mary Sugarman at this time. It was someone else working with Tara Rubin casting. But I went to the chorus call. I sang Sherry. Belted the entire thing full voice, like didn't sing it in my head voice, just belted all of it because I didn't know what I was doing. And all I, when I left the room, everyone on the line was like, got a call back and like went and read scenes and was like, oh my God, this is it. This is going to be my Broadway debut. I'm so excited. This is amazing. And then as happens, didn't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And was like, well, what's going on? And the casting company didn't have their own offices, so the callback had been held in this space that was MCC's space, that was you know, that was kind of a rehearsal space, whatever. I went in a couple weeks later to rehearse something else. I was singing in like a benefit concert or something, and walked into this room, and on the floor, like these rooms are never cleaned, there was like pile of trash, but there was a list of people who'd been called back for Jersey Boys on the floor. And I was not one of these people.
Aww.
And so I, you know, and I final callbacks kind of thing. And I was like, I was like, oh, and I went home and I cried my eyes out for days. You could ask my husband. Like, because I was like, I was sure. I was like, they're looking for short guys who can sing high. This is my chance. And I didn't get it. I was devastated. I was devastated. And I was like, well, never again. I will never open my heart to, you know, whatever. and then, you know, I kept doing other things. I toured with Beauty and the Beast. I was in the world premiere of the stage version of High School Musical, which we were going to take on tour as well. I was in between. We opened that in Atlanta, and Disney was like, we're not going to do anything with that. This is just it was the same thing they did with Newsies. They were like, we're just going to see if we can release it for school rights. And then they came and saw, this is totally a side note, but High School Musical, we did it in Atlanta at the Fox Theater, which holds 6,000 people. When we opened, this was like the height of High School Musical. And like the people who are in this show now, you would like Patty Murin was in the show. Ariel Jacobs was in the show. Like these like people who are like big Broadway names now. This is all, but also like are the two adults in the show, Allison Fraser and Ron Bomer were in the show. Like amazing Broadway names. Like when Disney came and saw the reaction of this audience, they about tore the freaking theater apart.
Oh, shit.
And the merch sale, this is what really got Disney. Most shows, when you sell merch, like even on Jersey Boys, when it was really successful, they would sell like $3,000 worth of merch on like a good night. The first night of High School Musical, they sold $25,000 worth of merchandise.
Holy shit.
And that's when Disney went, oh shit, we're gonna run this. So then they like had a meeting with the cast and were like, okay, everybody, there's gonna be a tour of the show. We want to use all of you, but we don't know what's gonna happen, but you know, let us know if you get anything else because we, you know, we're gonna, and it was like, oh my, and I was like, oh my God, this is gonna be it. High School Musical is gonna be my first production contract. It's gonna get me working with Disney. It's gonna be my first big national tour. I'm so excited. So I was on a break from that production and the tour, which was gonna start rehearsing like in March, and we had done it in like January. And my agent calls and is like, they wanna see you for Jersey Boys again. And I was like, no. Absolutely not. They've already said no. They don't want me. No, I don't want to. It's just, they just broke my heart. And I had just started working with this agent and he was like, girl, people don't get cast for roles all the time. Just go in and sing for them again. You don't know what's going to happen. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. So I went in and I sang and then got called back like so many millions of times, like so much so that they, and this is a rule with equity, they had to start paying me to be at the auditions because I had been at so many callbacks.
Holy shit.
Shows don't really do this anymore, but back then they were really, so like I had so many callbacks for the show. I went to what was called Frankie Camp, which was a thing.
Learning sorry, Jersey water, accent.
Where they, well, no, they didn't actually teach us the accent.
Are you kidding?
No, they really didn't. No, but they just wanted, like, they just, like, they would find a guy who could come in and maybe sing it, and they'd be like, okay, now can he act? Can he dance? We don't know. So they brought us all in for this Frankie Camp, and it was 3 days, one day of acting, one day of singing, and one day of dancing. And the singing day was with Katie Agresta, who was by then like the vocal coach on the show. She was coaching John Lloyd Young and the other guys who were doing it at that point. And I had, you know, so I had singing day with her and she listened to me sing and she was like, fine, don't eat cheese. And I was like, okay, great, thanks. and then like a dancing day with the dance captain from the show and the assistant choreographer who like taught us, you know, well, you know, butch it up and all these kind of things, right? And then a day with the assistant director who by this point was no longer my husband's friend's boyfriend, Bill, but now this other woman. And she, you know, we read through the scene, she gave me notes. And right before I left, I was like, should I dye my hair? Cause I'm like dirty blonde. I was blonder than I am now. And she was like, you know what? Yes, dye your hair. And I was like, okay, good to know. So I dyed my hair and then had my final callback. And it was, and by this point they told us like, okay, this is for, we're gonna open a second national tour that's gonna start in Chicago. And so this is for that. And I was like, okay, cool, that would be fine. But also, well, I have High School Musical, so I don't know if I wanna do it. And then after the final callback, I got a call from my agent and he was like, well, they don't want you for the second national, they want you for the first national. They're moving the guy who is understudying Frankie to be Frankie, who was Jared Spector. They're moving him to be Frankie in Chicago, so they're going to have you replace the Joey is moving up to be the alternate Frankie, because by this point there was an alternate Frankie who did two shows a week. They're moving the Joey up to be alternate Frankie, and you're going to be Joey and understudy Frankie and whatever. So, okay, great. So then I was like, well, shit, what do I do? And at this point it was like, well, High School Musical said they're going to run for like 6 months, and Jersey Boys said they're going to run for like a year, so I guess I'll do Jersey Boys because they said they're going to run for a year. So I wrote to the High School Musical people and was like, I'm so sorry. And they were like, oh, it's okay. And I think they were actually a little relieved because I was absolutely the oldest person in the ensemble of High School Musical. And
you were in the ensemble for the show?
Yes, for okay. Yes. And yeah. I was the high voice and being short came in handy. Yeah. I was the nerdy boy, right? Because the way that show works is there's like all the jock boys, right? Yeah. And then there's all the nerds. And the way that it worked out, like all the songs were written for the jocks to sing down here and mm-hmm. the nerds to sing up here in the girl octave.
Yeah.
But they couldn't have all the nerds just be girls. That didn't make any sense. So I was the nerdy boy who sang all the girl parts because I was singing with the girls, but I was a boy because I was on stage as the boy. So I left that and I went and did Jersey Boys and I stayed on the tour for 5 years. The Great Recession happened like a year into the run where I was like, I think I'm ready to go. And my agent was like, don't leave.
Yeah.
There's nothing. All the theaters are closing. And it was like, oh, okay, I'll stay. And my husband lost his job because of the Great Recession, all this stuff. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay, then I gotta stay. So I did. I stayed for a really long time. And I was the Joe Pesci track. I understudied Frankie and I started going on for Frankie and went on for Frankie a lot. And then by that point I was like, well shit, I wanna play Frankie. Mm-hmm. But never got cast as it, but had little things. I also understudied the role of Bob Crew, who is their record producer, right? Who's the gay record producer in the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and that was weird. I was the only person who understudied both of those tracks because someone had left our company and the swing who came in to cover that role was like super butch straight guy who like no one would believe was gay. So we're like, well, who else is gay? Oh, Quarter's gay. So he can So I started covering him.
Range.
Range, right? Gay and short. That's my whole range.
It's a short range.
So I was understanding both of those and going on, but like I said, being bored and out on the road for 5 years, so I was like, I'm ready to go back to the city and try doing something else. But right before I left the tour, they called and said, hey, will you go play Bob Crew on Broadway? Because Peter Gregus, who originated the role, was going out for, they'd given him a leave of absence. And they were like, will you come and do that? And I was like, fuck yes, absolutely. So I did. So I made my Broadway debut in Jersey Boys playing Bob Crew, the gay producer who I didn't even understudy when I first got it. But the moral of the story, boys and girls, is if you want to get on Broadway, just do a national tour and have costumes made, and eventually they'll have to put you in because they're too cheap to make new costumes for someone else.
That's so real, though. That's so real. Yep.
So I did that for 3 months and then and was like, okay, now my Jersey Boys journey is over and I'm gonna go out into the world and do something else. Well, the world is a dark, cold, dreary place. And after a year of that, and my husband and I deciding that we wanted to grow our family and have kids, and we were like, but we have no money. So I went back to the producers and was like, hey, if anything opens up in Jersey Boys anywhere, let me know, because we want to have a kid and that it takes money and, Yeah. And so they called me and were like, would you go be a swing in Las Vegas? And I was like, sure. So I went and then I was a swing in Las Vegas for 7 months, covering those roles plus a whole bunch of other roles that I didn't cover. So now I had all the costumes. and then after that point, they just kind of kept using me in the show whenever they needed me. They used me a lot to do like pre-press for the tours. By this point, there were two tours that were out and I had gone and stood by for Frankie on both of them. Mm-hmm. And they would call me and be like, hey, the show's going to Cleveland next week and it's gonna be on the morning show, but the cast is still in Schenectady. So go to Cleveland and be on the morning show, sing Can't Take My Eyes Off of You and do an interview. Okay, great. So that's what I did for like 2 years.
That's so
I just
crazy.
Did that along with doing other shows and whatever and drag stuff by this point.
Yeah.
And then I was away doing, what was I doing? It was right after that contest that I did with Sutton Lee Seymour. And I hadn't done the show in 3 years. I had just done all this press stuff for them, and and I had left to do this cruise gig that I had where I was singing on a cruise ship for a couple weeks. It wasn't like a contract. It was just like a guest entertainer thing where I sang some Frankie Valli stuff on this cruise ship. But and I'm on the plane coming back from like Mexico or something like that, and I get this call from the producers, and we're like, hey, are you in New York? We need a Frankie Valli on Broadway tomorrow. And it was like, I called and I was like, I'm in a plane right now. I'm on a layover, but I'll be there, you know, tonight at 9 o'clock. And he was like, great, go to the theater. And when you can go to the theater when you get there. And I was like, what? So I got there and like, they needed more coverage in the building. I didn't actually go on for Frankie Valli that night. Okay. Like it wasn't that, but I was like, you know that flight. I was like, what am I doing? Because I haven't done the show. I was like, do I still know the lines? Do I still know the choreography? So they just needed more people in the building because they were down to one person who could do it. And they were like, we just need someone else in the building in case he falls off the stage or whatever. We need someone who can go on. So that was how I ended up being the standby for the closing company of the show. I came in and they kept me, and they just kept me because people left and whatever. And so I just stayed. And so then I was the Frankie Valli standby for the rest of the run of the show. And then again, the show closed and we were like, okay, well, bye Jersey Boys. I guess that's it. And then, 6 months later, they're like, hey, we're going to open off Broadway. It was like, great. Of course, I said, hey, if you want me to play Frankie Valli, I will. And they're like, no, we're going a different direction. And they did. They hired an amazing guy who was fabulous. But 3 months into that run, I get another phone call. And it's like, hey, are you in town? We need a Frankie Valli. And by this point, I'm like, yeah, sure, fine. Yeah, I'm in town, no problem. So this point, I walk in the building thinking, yeah, I'm just going to walk in the building and, sign in and collect my paycheck and go. And the stage manager's like, okay, so you're on tomorrow. And I was like,
oh shit,
what? And I was like, she's like, and she said, it's a matinee. We don't have time to have, it's not legal for us to have a rehearsal. Like it would be overtime. We can't do it. She's like, can you do it? And I was like, I guess I can. So the next Saturday afternoon, I went on having not done the show in 3.5 years. And
the off-Broadway version is different too.
It's the same show with the same, like it's just like shrunken down.
Yeah,
right?
Like it's
the
like same, much smaller.
Yeah, it's much smaller. There's the same number of people on the stage, but not as many backstage. And it's the same costumes for the men, but different costumes for the women, which really threw me off because I had no idea who any of these people were. I had literally just met them. And I literally only knew who people were. And this would happen on the road too, when they'd send me off on the road to be like, hey, go play Frankie Valli in Providence, Rhode Island for the weekend. I wouldn't meet people until I saw them on stage. I'm sitting across from Mary Delgado and I'm like, okay, well, this is our first time meeting and now I'm going to make out with her.
Yeah.
Like it was like, yeah, I'd never. And so I knew who people were by their clothes. Like that's who I knew who the character were. Not because I knew who this guy was. It was, she's wearing the green dress. So she's my mother. Great. Like that was it. So that was all. And so it was crazy in saying that first one, but of course I invited everyone I knew, including Sutton Lee Seymour. She was there for that first performance, but my husband was there. My son was there. By this point we'd adopted our son. It was an amazing, crazy adrenaline rush experience that was fantastic. And so from then on, I joke and say that like Jersey Boys was literally like booty call. I would get this text, hey, you in town? Yeah, you want to come be Frankie tomorrow? Okay. And that was like what I did until the show closed. When the show closed, I did the last month of the show because the guy who was doing it booked a movie where he booked us, bring it back to the Mormons somehow, booked this like Mormon version of the Ten Commandments or something where he was playing Moses. And like, so he was gone for the last month of the show. So I went and played Frankie Valli for the last month of the off-Broadway run. And now I've been doing it regionally, just like I always thought I would when I was a teeny tiny child. So
aww. Can't escape.
Nope. And don't want to. Girl, it's a paycheck.
Hell yeah.
It's
my husband's favorite show. So
It's everybody's husband's favorite show. Yeah. If they're straight.
Absolutely. Literally, he's only seen like two shows, but that's his favorite one. So
there you go. What's not to like? It's got smoking, it's got murder, it's got prostitutes, it's got everything. It's great.
It really does. It
has. Oh, I should call him.
Does that just remind you? The prostitutes reminded you of that, or what was that?
Probably all of it. Yes.
Yeah. All the above. All the above. Yeah.
Before we move on, I definitely want to talk about you performing at the Tony Awards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please.
That was this weird confluence of events. The show was in Atlanta, and I had a vacation scheduled because at that point my husband was living in Tucson, Arizona, working. And so I had a vacation scheduled, and then we were going to go to New York for a wedding. And so I went to Tucson, and when I got to Tucson, I started getting these messages from my friends in the Broadway cast, because by this time I hadn't been in the Broadway cast yet, but I had friends from the tour who had moved to the Broadway cast. And they're like, oh my God, we're so excited to work with you on the Tonys. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And so I called the stage manager, my stage manager, and was like, I'm getting these messages that I'm going to be on the Tonys. And he was like, I haven't heard of that. I don't know what they're talking about. And I call my agent and I'm like, I'm getting the, and he's like, we haven't heard anything about that. That's not true. And I was like, okay, cool, fine. But then my friends in the Broadway show text me and they're like, no, we literally have a script for the Tonys and it says Quarter. And like, and there's no one else named Quarter. And like, it says that you're playing Frankie Valli on the Tony. And I'm like, you guys, this is not happening. My agent says, the stage manager, this is not happening. I don't know what you're talking about. Must be a typo. I don't know what it is, whatever. So then my husband and I leave Tucson and get on the plane to come to New York to go to my best friend's wedding. And the layover in Dallas, I get a call from the producers of Jersey Boys. And she says, hi, Quarter. You probably know what this call is about. And I was like, what? And she's like, well, we want you to be on the Tony Awards. And I was like, everyone just told me no, this was not going to happen. And what? She's like, so you're going to play, we're doing this thing where we're going to have a Frankie Valli, because at this point there were five companies of Jersey Boys running in North America. There was the first national tour, the Las Vegas company, the Chicago company, that the second national tour had never left Chicago. They stayed for 4 years. The Toronto company, did I say Broadway, national tour, Toronto, Chicago, and Vegas. There were five companies. And for what they couldn't like take everyone from all of the companies to like make them come, and it wasn't legal because the guy playing, we had the tour had opened Toronto, so we were the first Toronto company, but then we left and they had their own Canada based company who were all Canadian citizens, and there wasn't time to get a work visa for the Canadian Frankie to be on the Tony Awards, so they had our tour Frankie be the Canadian Frankie because he had opened the Toronto company. And then they were like, well, we need one more. And I was the understudy for the tour Frankie. So they had me be the tour Frankie on the Tonys. So I like from literally not doing anything and being told, no, 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 this wasn't happening. And not even knowing it was happening to like, hey, you're going to be on the Tony Awards was like insane. So they, you know, I mean, they brought me out from the tour and they put me up in a hotel. I mean, and they did this with all the guys from all the companies. And, you know, we had rehearsals with the company and, you know, we flew our costumes out. I had a carry-on with my costumes in it. Wow. And, you know, and did all of that and rehearsed and then got to perform on the Tonys, which was like Radio City rehearsal, dream come true. Then being like, the four Frankies, there's this, when they do the show at Radio City, there's a giant, like, Tony Award in the center of the room where they sometimes perform on, like a stage that's shaped like a Tony Award and has it pointed. And what do they call that? I don't know what they call it, but the Frankies were gonna be on there. And everyone at home thinks there's like an elevator or something fancy. It's not. You literally like crawl onto the stage and then pop up. So that's what we were gonna do. And so we're sitting there huddled underneath there as Emily Skinner is accepting her Tony Award for Next to Normal. Like we're watching her go crazy up there, like ready, like hiding, watching her win the Tony. And then it's like, and now Jersey Boys. And we're like, okay, and run up. It was like standing there and Angela Lansbury, Bernadette Peters, like all of there. And like, I'm on national television right now singing this song. And there's all of these people who have been like mentor, like inspirations my entire life, and they're all right there. It was the craziest, most amazing, most wonderful experience of my whole entire life. I still remember it. It's fabulous and wonderful.
I remember watching it.
And you were in kindergarten, I'm sure.
I was not. Well, I just remember watching it and I was like, Jersey Boys, that's not a new show. Like,
Yeah, no, they were, it was the time. I mean, this always happens on the Tonys, right? Like,
yeah.
The producers want advertisement.
Yeah, of course,
so they'll do anything
they
can to get their show.
I mean, that's what the Tony
Awards
is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. the producers of Jersey Boys had, you know, paid basically to get Jersey Boys on the Tonys and, you know, to be entertainment. Because I think it was kind of a slow year for like new stuff. So there wasn't a lot of performances that could happen.
Yeah.
So I think they were trying to fill it with more stuff, and that we got lucky and we're the filler. So
whatever it takes, whatever.
Yep.
It takes.
Amen. I fit the costume. Bring me in.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right, moving away from Jersey Boys.
Yes.
I'm sure it'll always come back up. you've had a couple of your own like cabaret shows. So
yeah.
I want to talk about those.
Yeah.
You did Under the Sea Show, a tribute mm-hmm. to Howard Ashman, which is one of my favorite lyricists.
Yes.
Same.
Very like underrated, I feel like.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. I mean, he single-handedly, have you seen the documentary Howard
yes.
on and have you have
I
you
cried.
Seen I know. And have you seen Waking Sleeping Beauty? Have you seen that one?
I don't know if I watched it yet, but it's the Disney rotation.
It is. It's so good. They're both so good. And both of them kind of tell the story of how Howard Ashman really came in and saved the Disney Animation Studios
yes.
from, you know, complete destruction, because he, you know, he brought them back. He taught them how to tell stories again, because they'd become so focused on just the animation and kind of, you know, making money for a theme park kind of thing, that they weren't telling compelling stories anymore that would get people, kids especially, but anyone, you know, engaged in a story. And Howard came in and was like, well, no, here's how you tell stories. And here's how you write musicals, right? I mean, he brought a Broadway sensibility to the animation studios, because they hadn't had that before. If there were songs in the cartoons, they were, you know, kind of incidental and not really mm-hmm. important. And he really changed all of that. So yeah, so I have this cabaret that's based on, that's a tribute to him and is music from all of those Disney things, but also from the things that he wrote before Disney, especially, and of course, Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
But Smile, and which was his big Broadway show that was unfortunately a flop, but where he met Jodie Benson, who would go on to be the voice of Ariel.
That's right.
And you know, some other like small trunk songs that he wrote that were never in shows or in little off-Broadway reviews or things like that. So, and you know, talked about his life and his contribution to the world before he unfortunately passed away of HIV and AIDS.
So you talked about this a little bit earlier. You did mm-hmm. Wanna Bet,
yes.
your tribute to Bette Midler.
Yes, because I am just obsessed with Bette. I love her so much. And I think everybody has different images of who Bette
yes,
is and what she does
absolutely.
In their minds,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right? I mean, people either know her from movies, which she did in the 80s, and they were all fabulous and amazing, or, you know, and then early 90s, Hocus Pocus, right? So the whole generation knows who she is just because of Hocus Pocus,
yes.
right? Mm-hmm. And all of that. But she had this amazing recording career before that, and this amazing, you know, touring career, where she was doing this really oddball touring throughout the world that was like, it was concert, but it was also like body stage burlesque show almost, you know, and she was, you know, a constant guest on all of the late night TV shows and talk shows and all those kinds of things. Not to mention, you know, brilliant movie actress even before all of the stuff in the 80s, you know, nominated for a Golden Globe for The Rose, which if you haven't seen The Rose, is fucking brilliant. She's just this amazing personality. And so I wanted to kind of bring all of those facets of her to like a cabaret kind of space. I did it at 54 Below, and then I ran it at Don't Tell Mama, and that's what started getting me the gigs on the Atlantis cruises, was they wanted me to bring the show there, and I've brought it all over the place too. So, and I love her. She's an absolute inspiration. She's amazing.
I love that. And she's probably not easy to sing her songs either.
No.
She's my Mama Rose.
Yes. Oh, God. Yes, me too. And that's the thing. That's where I first fell in love with her, was that gypsy, my stepdad taped it for me off of the TV when it aired, and I watched it over and over and over again. She was, I mean, now I watch it and I'm like, ooh, girl, that's some big acting for television. But
it sure was.
It sure was. But I mean, but it's Mama Rose. She is larger than life. That's the whole point, right? Yeah. So, amazing. So good.
So going from there, we are going to talk about what you're up to right now, which is Musical Mondays.
Yes, absolutely.
New location.
New location. We've had quite a few locations with our little show, haven't we?
I've been to most of them.
Oh, good. We love that. Yeah, you know, I started off doing that show, doing Broadway Mondays with Suttonly Seymour at Hardware. Yes. When the pandemic started, things got kind of weird and all of us were traveling a lot. And so we parted ways from doing the show at Hardware. They kept the name Broadway Mondays, and there is still a show called Broadway Mondays there with Vijay O'Ricky, who does amazing work, and Jacqueline and Holly Box Springs. We love all those queens. They're fabulous. But it's no longer our show. They're definitely lip syncing queens. And Holly, of course, is known for amazing costume changes and all that kind of stuff. It's got the same name, but it's a very different show than what we were always doing. When everything opened up after the pandemic, we first went to what was Therapy and is now called Hush. We got the show running there again with the cast that included Paige Turner and myself and Suttonly Seymour. And we added Evita Loca, who kind of came into the scene during the pandemic. Evita Loca, by the way, I met doing Jersey Boys. We did the show together on tour for a couple of years, but we actually met at the final callback that we were both at for that Chicago run. She started in the Chicago run and did the entire Chicago run and then joined us on the tour and then did Broadway and then did Beautiful on Broadway and all those things. Ooh. So also amazing Broadway pedigree there. So Evita Loca joined us for the iteration that was at Hush. And Hush didn't turn out to be the right kind of space for the show. The upstairs
it's changed a lot.
Space, it's huge. That space is really, really big and not easy to see for an audience passing by. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just never got a foothold in a huge audience there. Every once in a while, we'd have a huge crowd for whatever reason, which would be great, but then they wouldn't show up the next week. And so we never kind of really got things going there. So we decided to try to take the show somewhere else that was more intimate and more focused on the shows. Hush is a great, like, if you want to go to a club, if you want to go out dancing on a Friday, Saturday night, they have strippers and dance poles and the whole thing. And that was part of it. We would show up and be like, where's the stage? We have to, like, build the stage because everything is, like, stripper poles right now kind of thing. Right? It just wasn't kind of set up for us. So we got in with The Spot on Monday nights, and that's turned out to be absolutely amazing. It's the right kind of space for us because it's intimate and small. There's a dedicated, like, show watching space with a stage, a great sound system, an actual spotlight. And listen, I'm going to get into something really quickly here. If you go see drag anywhere else in the country, if not the world, the one thing that every bar has is a spotlight, is a light that follows the queen wherever she goes in the space. Because you're in these bars wherever, and the queen's running around singing or lip syncing or whatever, and she could be in the audience, whatever. You've got someone running a spotlight so you can see the queen wherever she is. She spent 3 hours on her makeup. You don't want to see her in the dark running around in the audience. For whatever reason, that has not caught on in New York City. I do not know why. But we need spotlights for these drag queens. Even if you don't have any other lights, you could have no other lights at all. If you have a dark room and a spotlight, a queen is going to give you an amazing show because she knows, the audience knows where to put their focus and whatever. So The Spot has an actual spot, which is amazing. That's fantastic. And we've really found our audience there, and we're having a great time. And it's this rotating cast of the four of us, which is great because all four of us are constantly busy doing other things. You know, we work on the cruises, we work in Puerto Vallarta, we work in Provincetown, we work on Fire Island. You know, we all have our own cabaret things that we do. So, and theater stuff too, right? Sometimes I go play Frankie Valli and Jersey Boys for a little bit, you know? So we got all these things going on. So it's a great space. The space, the management just trusts us to always put on a good show with no matter who is there. It could be one of us, it could be four of us, whatever. although it's only been four of us once, and which is like a great, it's great, but it's insane as well. And we have a fantastic time, and it's all musical theater. It's a lot of live singing, although there is a little lip syncing, especially we kind of always end the night with a Broadway potpourri where we get suggestions from the audience and lip sync whatever Broadway musical, movie, Disney stuff they want to hear. But it's mostly live sung, and it's a, you know, got a musical theater sensibility. So everyone is, it's a community. Everyone understands the jokes. When we're talking about Patty or Carol or Ethel or whatever, they know who we're talking about. And it's not Beyonce, and it's not Death Drops, and it's not, you know, those kinds of things. It's its own unique New York experience that I don't know that you can get anywhere else. So,
well, I was thinking about it, because I go to a lot of shows, but like,
of course.
I feel like Musical Mondays is actually my favorite show, because there's just so much obscure musical theater, like references, like things I don't even know what they are, because they're so obscure. So I feel like I'm learning every time I go, and I love Broadway so much, but I'm still like, I don't know every, like there's a lot. So
yeah,
and I love the live singing. I don't know. I'm like, I think this is my current favorite. Like, it really doesn't, it really doesn't happen anywhere else anymore. I feel like a lot of that, even like queer culture, is kind of like dying, as we saw with RuPaul's Drag Race, with like no one knowing the Cher song. Like, I feel like there's like,
it's just
getting away with the younger generation, but I feel like it's still there.
Yeah, for sure.
Currently, well, at the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I was, and you know, it's up to us to like keep that going, right? Like to keep, and like, God bless RuPaul for like trying to keep these, you know, older divas in the conversation, and keeping like this old sensibility alive, because if it's not, then it's all just gonna be pop, which, like, listen, I've already said, I love pop music. I love new stuff. It all has its place. And I love going to a club and watching a girl twirl and death drop and lip sync and do the splits and all. I love it. I live for it. It's all fantastic. But that's only one facet of all of it, right? And drag started out, you know, going back to The Rose. if you go, everyone, go, this is your homework. Go watch The Rose, Bette Midler. I don't know where you can get it, because I don't know if it's on any streaming services, but it's, just find a bootleg on YouTube. It's fantastic. But if you watch that movie, there's a scene where she goes into a drag bar in the village, and they're singing live, and they're doing musical theater. Because that's where drag was at that point. Drag used to all be singing live, because you couldn't just download something from the internet and mix a lip sync on your computer. Like, if you wanted to make a lip sync like Lip Synca, you had to literally take physical tape and cut it and tape it together. And that was your, you know, drag mix, right?
Like, and she had to record it too. She had to go to the TV.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Blast it and record it.
Exactly. That's what she did, right? That's how she started that whole movement. But that's how lip syncing began, was like taping things from the TV and getting that kind of stuff. Before that, it was all live singing. When you went to a drag bar, there was a piano and a band and drag queens singing live. And so that's still, it should still be a part of the culture. We shouldn't just let that go by the wayside because technology's made it easier for us to just lip sync, right?
Yeah. I have a lot of feelings about this.
I think a lot of people do. And again, that's an amazing part of the art form. I am not throwing shade at anyone who does that for a living, for their profession, for their art. I love it all. I absolutely love it. But it's only one facet of this multifaceted, amazing queer community, because it's just, I mean, I, you know, it's like drag kings, right? Like, there's a whole bunch of people who are drag kings, who make their living as drag kings, who do drag in a different, in a different gender expression. And that kind of gets swept under the rug a little bit too, right? By the mainstream stuff. You can find it and it's out there, but we shouldn't just let it go because it's not the mainstream thing that we're all seeing on our TVs.
Yeah. We definitely need just variation.
Yeah, absolutely. Variety.
And luckily New York, we can still get that. I feel like outside of New York, it's all one thing usually.
It's harder. It's harder for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Before we wrap up our little section, I just wanted to talk about you being married for about two decades and also adopting a son. You're like our only guest who has probably been married.
Wow.
I think so, right?
Wow, in 90 episodes, I'm your first married queen?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
So what's it like to be on the other side?
It's fabulous. I married my husband before I started doing drag, so maybe that's the clue. But
the secret.
Exactly. The secret. That's the secret. Drag the man in first, marry the man today. And frankly, when the very first Halloween I went out in drag, when we were together, he was a little weirded out by it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but I think that comes from our generation of the internalized femme phobia and all of that kind of stuff, right? He is absolutely on board. And that big party we threw on Jersey Boys, he was in drag that night too and had the best time. And now understands, and I've put him in drag a few more times since then, and he's gorgeous and fabulous and wonderful. So now he's totally on board, loves it. It's amazing and totally supportive in all of those things. But we've been married for, we've been together for, it'll be 21 years this year, married wow. for, it'll be 18 years this year. We got married before it was legal. Mm-hmm. And we are legally married now too. It's wonderful to have, a support, someone who's constantly there, rooting for me, helping me. I mean, I would never have been able to do all of the online shows during the pandemic if it wasn't for his amazing research into how to make the sound work and how to, how to host a show on, all of these things, right? So, but more than just that kind of actual support is the, just the moral support and the, constant, always knowing that someone is in your corner, that you're not alone in the world, that you're always going to have a cheerleader. And also having another person to focus on, aside from just oneself. I think is a really healthy thing too. That's why family works, right? Is because we all focus on other people, which is, one of the reasons why we decided to adopt as well. Adopting was something my husband, or having children was always something my husband wanted to do. It took me a lot longer to warm up to it, just because of being a performer and, having a career where I don't know where the next paycheck is necessarily coming from, and all of that. I was wary of bringing a child into all of that. Eventually realized that it was something that I wanted to do. Then we explored the different ways that a gay couple can go about that. And surrogacy was way too expensive. And we didn't want an infant anyway, with the way that my work is and all that kind of stuff. If we'd got like a baby, that would have meant putting one or both of our careers almost completely on hold while you are bringing this life form who can't speak and doesn't know how to walk or eat or anything, right, into the world. So having an older kid was a better way for us to go, and that's how we kind of zeroed in on the foster system. And then we met our son, and the rest is history, because he's amazing and wonderful. We met him when he was 10. The adoption went through when he was 11. And now he's 17, a senior in high school.
Oh my God.
I know. He is taller than everyone. And fabulous and wonderful. We love him very much, and he's been the most amazing addition to our family, and it's great. He's wonderful.
The real question is, does he want to do musical theater?
Musical theater, I don't know. Drag, absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if he wants to do drag as a career, but yeah, he definitely does drag. This Halloween, he was Barbie.
Yes.
I did his makeup and styled his wig for him, but he ordered the dress online and the whole thing, and looked gorgeous. If I do say so myself, and won the costume contest.
Yes.
Because. Amazing. He's fabulous, and fabulous in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Oh,
that was so
this is such a nice way to end this section.
That was so nice.
It's usually not this nice.
Yeah, no. Okay, we're gonna take our last little break, and we'll be right back.
Awesome.
Bye, kids.
Bye. Wait, did you just say wait?
Wig, okay.
And we're back.
We're back.
Yay. For our final little shit talk.
Sure.
It's our cool. It's our like, it's our chill.
Our moment. Wind down.
Our wind down.
Like love when it. You work out. They're like, yeah. Oh, time to cool wind down.
This is our 5-minute walk down on the treadmill.
Oh my God, I do that too. I don't even walk that fast. And then I do the I do the 0.5 mile. I'm barely walking, but
meanwhile, I'm over here. I'm doing my shred at 5 miles an hour.
Yes.
Oh my God, you are crazy. I'm always worried I'm gonna break my legs.
Oh no, I have very strong legs.
I have bad knees.
I like
you're young. You didn't hit 30 yet. So
careful with those knees on the treadmill, girl.
Yeah, no, for real.
It actually helped my knees. Anyways, besides the point.
I mean, you needed the help.
Okay. Completely off topic. I did hurt my knee doing a voguing class. I was.
That's not off topic. That's drag.
Yeah, I was drag. I think it was duck walking. Maybe.
Oh yeah.
You're not supposed to duck walk in socks, and I duck walked in socks.
Oh no.
Oh my God! Why would you do that?
Because I was new to duck walking.
That sounds like an accident waiting to happen.
Laomi was also duck walking in socks, but she's like, I'm a professional, so I can do it. Anyways,
well, even she shouldn't be doing it. But
yeah, she shouldn't be doing it. With how many margaritas she had, yeah. But the treadmill helped with my recovering of my
good.
Knee.
Yes. Good.
So,
I'm glad your knees.
Thank you for this update, Caitlin.
Now back to our freaking guest.
Back to our guest.
All right, so we're gonna do our usual rundown questions.
Great.
You've answered this question before, not here, but so we'll ask it again.
Yeah.
Would you ever want to be on RuPaul's Drag Race?
My answer is always sure. Listen, the exposure would be fabulous. Although the game has changed so much that I don't think that I'm really right for the show. Mm. I mean, especially now, like we said earlier in the show, who's the oldest person they've had on in the last 5 years? They were probably
well. They've changed how they cast now. They only want very young, unknown. Queens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's been, you know, yeah. Back in like the, you know, Bianca Del Rio days. I'm not saying that I could compete with Bianca Del Rio. She's absolutely amazing. But like, I could have competed on seasons like that because it was about character and all of those and being multifaceted. And, you know, now the show is the grand finale of the show is a lip sync, which is, you know, can I lip sync? Yes. But am I going to win a lip sync against the likes of the other queens who are on Drag Race? Probably not. So I would love the exposure, but it's not something that I'm like, chasing down. I'm not sending in audition tapes, but not everyone sends in audition tapes. So if they were to call me out of the blue and be like, hey, do you want to come be on the show? Then I would say yes, just because the exposure could be absolutely fantastic. Although again, it's not fantastic for everyone.
That's true.
But it's not something that I'm like chasing after right now.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any future upcoming projects to promote?
I'm at the spot every Monday for Musical Mondays at 10 p.m. Videos start at 9 p.m. Broadway videos. Follow me on Instagram at Cacophony Daniels and you'll know exactly where I am at every moment.
That's right. What's the best advice you've been given in drag?
Oh gosh. I think the best advice is to know who you are and be that. Don't try to be something that you're not. You know, finding a niche is actually a good thing. Being something weird and unusual is a good thing. I think that a lot of people feel like they have to, oh, well, I have to lip sync to these 5 songs in order to, I have to know this particular choreography, you know, in order, I have to be able to death drop, I have to be able to do the splits. I don't think that that's necessary. The queens, especially the queens from Drag Race, who have done the best are the ones who are totally different. Jinx Monsoon, Trixie Mattel, Bianca Del Rio, like the ones who are like upper echelon, really succeeding, are the ones who are doing something totally different than what everyone else is doing. So whatever your niche is, and if your niche is death drops and splits and all that, that's amazing. Girl, do you. And there is a market out there for that. And that's fabulous. But if you are interested in musical theater or Star Trek or, you know, whatever it is, do that. Because that's going to set you apart from other people and in the end make you happier because you'll be doing something that you love.
Wow.
Yeah.
Clap, clap,
that's
clap,
deep. Martia, you're allowed one question.
Thank you. Just
let's go in.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll keep it short. Miss Cacophony.
Yes.
Can you tell us a tantalizing tale from nightlife? Something salacious, something daring, something crazy.
Oh, do you have something? Salacious. Oh, I don't know if I have anything salacious. I just have like weird coincidence stuff. Like
for us.
Like
we'll take
like
it.
weird coincidences. So I have been to Puerto Vallarta for the last 3 years. And when you do shows in Puerto Vallarta, you bark on the beach is what they call it. You go out and you pass out flyers because people who are in a vacation town, they don't know what they're doing that night. So you go and try to get them to come to your show that night. You go to the beach and you have little flyers and you pass them out and you meet people, you talk to people. You're not in drag because the thing about Puerto Vallarta is if you're not a Mexican citizen, it's not actually legal for you to go out and go on the beach and pass out flyers. So you don't go in drag because then everyone would know you. So you're kind of like incognito, like, hey, how's it going? Oh, would you like to come to my show? Oh my gosh. You know, that kind of thing. Mm. So you're very incognito. So you're just walking around. But I usually, when I go out, I have a t-shirt or a tank top that's, you know, that's Cacophony merch. So it's got my face on it. So I can point to that and be like, that's me coming to my show.
Mm. That's smart.
So I was walking around on the beach. Was this my first year there? I think it was my first year there. But like for my last show. So I was getting used to it. And the way, you know, you just strike up conversations with people, you know, it's hard to break in on the beach. And especially if you've ever been to the beach in Puerto Vallarta or probably lots of places in Mexico, you're constantly bombarded with people wanting to sell you hats and scarves and bags and weed and like all right. Everything. Right. So you kind of have to pick your moments and choose. And so the way I do it is I strike up conversation. If I notice someone has a dog with them, that's a great, like, oh my God, your dog is so cute. Start talking with them about their dog and then they'll talk to you about anything. Right. So, so I try to always find, so I saw this guy and he had, a t-shirt on of a San Francisco drag queen. I cannot remember for the life of me right now who it was, but a drag queen that I knew from San Francisco. And so I was like, oh my God, I love her. So I struck up this conversation with this couple on the beach about this guy's t-shirt. And, you know, I said, oh my God, well, I'm a drag queen too. I'm Cacophony Daniels. I'm doing my show. I've got my sunglasses on, you know, and whatever. They've got sunglasses on too. It's hot on the beach. They've got sunglasses on and hats and the whole thing. And then I said, so she's from the Bay Area. Are you guys from the Bay Area? And they said, yes. And I said, oh, I grew up in the Bay Area too. That's so funny. And then the guy goes, wait, did you go to San Jose State? And I'm like, oh no, I went to Santa Clara University. And he goes, oh my God. And he takes off his glasses and says, you were my first boyfriend. And I was.
Oh my God.
His name was Lucas. I had not seen him in 25 years. And what I didn't know, so I dated him when I was a senior in college, okay? I met him at a bar in Walnut Creek that had 18 and overnights, right? So I met him at this bar and I thought, and so I was like, I met him and I was like, oh, he's 18. He still lived with his parents. What I didn't know, he was actually at the time, he never told me, 16.
Ooh.
But I didn't know this, but I hadn't seen him. So we had had this entire conversation, him, both of us, like for like 10 minutes, I'm selling them on my drag show, all these kinds of things. Hadn't seen each other in 25 years. I was his first boyfriend. I taught him what lube was. Had no idea until we met on the beach in Puerto Vallarta all those many years later. And he came to my show tonight, that night, and had a fabulous time. So there you go. Small, small world. Coincidences
yes,
are funny.
Aww.
So it's not salacious. It's not anyone pooping on stage, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, thank God.
Okay. I love thank that.
God. Yeah, that was so cute.
That was like our most wholesome one we've ever
right?
met.
Well, I'm everyone's mom's favorite drag queen. I will always give you a wholesome story.
I love that. So we are down to our last question.
Ooh, okay.
Basically. Where do you want to take your drag in the future?
I want to keep performing live, but I want to go even further. I want to sing with symphonies. Mm. I want to, you know, I want to bring live singing drag like back into the forefront of what drag can be. There are so many great queens who sing, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be singing. I mean, you look at the queens who do musical theater stuff, you look at like Alexis Michelle, and there's like Bootsy LaFerris, like the queens like that. And then you look at like newer queens, you look at Stephanie's Child, the three of them, right? Jan and Rosé and Laguna Blue. Laguna Blue blows my mind. In fact, I meant to text her this the other day. I went to a dance class on Monday, and the warm up, and in the end of the warm up, I'm like, I recognize this voice. It was a Laguna Blue song. The dance teacher at Broadway Dance Center was using a Laguna Blue song. Yes. Like, amazing. She's so freaking talented. She's like pop princess diva, amazing. And again, so different from what I do, from what Sutton does, from what like any of, but like freaking brilliant. So, so great. So there's so many of us out there who have talent that is not what you see at a bar or a club. And I want live entertainment. I think that people really do, even if they don't know it, really want live entertainment to be something that they go out and see. We spent the whole pandemic, listen, we learned really well how to stay at home and watch Netflix and, you know, binge shows and entertain ourselves. But I think people need to get back out into the world and like interact with other people. And there's nothing like having a communal experience of being in a bar or preferably a cabaret space. So I want my drag to help bring cabaret back into the world. Because if you search for cabaret in just about any other town in the United States, you get strip clubs. You don't get like a piano bar with cute cocktail tables and you know, lamps and candles, right? Like, you get strip clubs. That's what they think cabaret is now. And it's like, what happened to this amazing art form, right? So that's where I want Cacophony to be. I want to bring that kind of entertainment all over and hopefully be a kind of spokesperson for like getting people don't go see live music anywhere anymore. And that's sad, because there are so many, not just drag acts, but so many all different kinds of acts that are not in the mainstream. There is a band in your town that you've never heard of that's fantastic. There is a singer in your town that you've never heard of that's fantastic, that is singing at a coffee shop or a tiny club somewhere. And if we can get more of those experiences happening, then we can get people out into the world. And that's good for everyone. It's good for capitalism. It's good for, you know, all of that stuff, but it's just good for people's souls to experience those kinds of things in like a communal way. So that's what I want to happen.
I'm with you. This is a side note, I'll probably edit it out, but I feel like you should tour with Thorgy Thor, because she's been traveling with all the symphonies.
Yes.
And violin.
I
just heard her on NPR doing an ad for her upcoming concert. So
that's amazing.
That would be love a funny.
And place. there's another like niche thing, right? Like Thorgy is out there, like she was on Drag Race doing whatever the stupid Drag Race stuff was. Yeah. Did she ever get to like do her real talent? No, not really. Because like, it may be, I like, yeah, like she never got to do that. Everyone like is reading her for Stevie Nicks or whatever, but it's like, yeah, but she's a musical virtuoso.
Yeah.
If you actually knew what she could really do, that's again, the niche kind of thing. She's making a life and a living and a career out of being herself. That's amazing.
On that note.
Yay.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so glad. I talked your ears off.
No, it was amazing. I feel like I learned a lot.
I was absorbing. I'm just like enthralled.
We were being your sponges.
Your beauty
blenders.
Love it.
Where can the kids find you on the internet?
The kids can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Cacophony Daniels. I am not on X because screw Elon Musk. I am also on YouTube, though. They can find me there. And for the really older listeners, I'm also on Facebook.
I haven't had a Facebook plug in here in a long time.
Exactly. But listen, Middle-aged women are an untapped drag queen market.
No, it's real. True. And they'll spend money on the brunches. And
yes,
stuff.
And that's the thing. Yes, Drag Race has got the teenage girls in, and teenage girls are amazing, and we love them, and they will become our middle-aged women someday. But the middle-aged women are the ones who will go out and actually have money to spend at something. So they're the ones you need to get because they love it.
No, it's real. It's real.
I love our brunch moms.
Yes.
But thank you again for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. This has been so fun.
Yeah.
I was Martyr.
I was C. Tepper.
And this was Wiggle. Bye.
Bye.
'm C. Tepper. You can follow me on Instagram at CTEPPER and read my book, The State of Drag, where I interviewed 175 drag queens from around the world. All proceeds go to charity on Amazon.com.
Ooh, I love that. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Drag the Martyr. And if you have any thoughts, comments, dick pics, send them to dragthemartyr@gmail.com.
Listen, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Pandora.
And catch up with past episodes on work.com. That's WERRRK.com. Artwork for Wigging Out was provided by Glitter Baby Online. That's Glitter Baby Online. Thank you.